Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP this morning for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to For Your Benefit. We're going to talk today about career transition during early and mid-career. And who better than to lead that than Michael Townsend. And Michael is the president of, and I always mess this up, Carpe Diem Coaching. Mm-hmm. Did I do it right this
That's
time?
That's it.
Okay.
Boned up on your Latin.
All right. And, well, I practiced yesterday before you came in. Anyway, and John Elliott, federal benefit strategist, retired Fed, retired seminar presenter, email answerer, and knows a lot about the federal and Social Security side of life. Good morning, John.
Morning, Bob and Mike.
All right. So, career transition. You know, when I think of that, I'm transitioning out and I'm going to go into retirement. I don't think that's our focus today. So correct me where I'm wrong.
Well, you know, Bob, even for those who are taking a retirement, they're eligible and their formula works out and so forth. In many cases, they're young enough and most importantly, healthy enough that they decide, you know, maybe I'll go out and find myself something elsewhere in government or private sector even. I'll take my retirement and then have some income as well and do it for as many years as my health will allow. And that is certainly a choice that people can and often do make. Particularly if they're coming out of DOD, because so many of the employees there are former military, and so they retired in their early 30s from the military, and perhaps very often get a job somewhere in DOD as a civilian, and then by the time they're in their 50s, they're eligible for yet another retirement. And for somebody like that, who's still healthy and so forth, they may say to themselves, you know, I might try this one more time. Maybe you won't go for a pension this time, but let me find a job somewhere doing something. The word transition, which is something that we work with for folks who are retiring, it actually is a very common word, meaning that, and it's a common phenomenon in all of our lives. We've all transitioned many times. When we were children, we left home and went to school. There was a transition, particularly just before we left, where mom or dad prepped us for what to expect and maybe even took us there a few times and so forth to be ready for it. It was a transition. Later, there was a transition when we left for college or left to go into the military or left home to do something. And just before we left, that was a transition. That was a period in which we prepared ourselves and we did hopefully some smart things to be ready for that next step. Before we got married, which is a transition, a whole different kind of life. And just before it, we prepared and got lots of advice from lots of people, probably more than we actually wanted. And now I want to stop right there and say all the rest of life had transitions, didn't it? Now, that being the case, there's one thing that I can note that is common to all transitions, and that is fear. There's a fear of the unknown that all of us share. And once we take the leap and we do something, it usually works out. But prior to that, even marriage, those who are willing to admit it, which is very few of us, that just before the marriage, all of us asked questions, is this really what I want to do? What is the way for me to make this surely a great outcome for myself? So in every one of those transitions, we've had that moment, that what one poet called the long dark night of the soul, to actually grasp what we were about to do, get advice, and then move forward. Now, to your question, when one changes from one job to another, or retires and gets a new job, particularly if it's going to be in the private sector, This transition will have, number one, fear, of course, and number two, the necessity. If we're smart, just like we did with all other transitions, we get advice. We find out from those who have been there before us, what's the best way for me to make this move? It's not inherently known by each of us exactly how to find a job. With all the talk and all the books you can read and so forth, in the end, to have a coach or a go to a workshop that goes into enough depth about the process, what to expect, what to do when things unfamiliar occur, and so forth. Even if we're staying within government, even if we're staying within our agency, for many people that I meet, the fact is they have not changed jobs in many years. So anything they used to know, they've forgotten. Maybe they've been the person hiring. And I tell everybody who's been on one side of the desk asking the questions, filling out the forms, part of the panel, etc. But I tell people that when they're ready to look, they need to let go of what they think they know and come and hear something about what it is to be on the other side of the desk, because it isn't the same. There is a whole different transaction going on for people on the other side of the desk. And so that's why there's a need that many people will recognize for transitioning, and hopefully, and oftentimes, their employer provides training in how to do that smartly, effectively, smoothly, with etiquette. There is an etiquette to changing jobs and so forth. So I hope that answers
your question. My first transition from home was on a plane that I had never been on to a place called Fort Bragg that I had never visited. And I got to stay there 12 weeks.
Was this a choice? I bet it wasn't.
This was not a choice.
No. Yes, and the judge said go, and you went. Yes.
That's it. Actually, I had some of those in the squad. Actually, it's one of the best experiences of my life. But that plane ride down was not.
Yes.
Anyway, but I didn't raise my hand and say, I'd like to transition out of here early. Anyway, let's can we go to the earlier stages of one's career with the millennials now? What do I know? I read about them and that they're more mobile in their early and mid stages of their career. They're not as wedded to, I got a job and this is what I do for the rest of my life.
Sure.
So when dealing with them, how do you keep them planted? I don't know that you can, but or what guidance would you have for somebody to say, okay, I've done my work here, and I think I want to go over to XYZ agency. And by the way, when we were all talking this morning, there was a magazine. I forget what it was.
The Federal Manager is, okay, believe the title of the magazine.
It was really good. It was the best, I think, four agencies or five agencies that they listed that one could work for. Let's just leave them nameless for the time being, because probably nobody there is thinking about moving.
Well, you never know. But when I did seminars for a number of years, you could tell whether the employees were generally happy or generally not. So, and I did seminars at least, I remember two at least on this short list, where I did multiple seminars, and you could tell that they were happy. Happier than perhaps others.
It was
palpable.
You know how I tell? If I walk into the class and everybody's talking with one another, they're happy. If I walk into the class and nobody's talking to the other one, or there is a side conversation, I go, uh-oh. Or, you know, it could be a group of really quiet people, yeah, too. But more often than not.
Yeah, and the other sign, not to belabor the point, is if they laugh a lot, you know, you'll say something semi-humorous, and they'll laugh.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good sign. But, you know, how you find these agencies, other than by word of mouth or perhaps an article like we looked at, is a question.
Okay.
Now, I personal experience, I left an agency after a very short stay there, I wasn't unhappy. In fact, my new boss was great. I mean, and I left for all the wrong reasons. And you talked about coaching. Well, I didn't have a coach other than my spouse, who mm-hmm. said, "Don't do this. Don't do this." Very no equivocation. But I did it anyway, and as I confessed to her many times, I think it's the worst decision in my career life that I ever made, was leaving that department. And I cringe when I think about it. I'm cringing now, but I didn't listen.
But you made it.
Didn't listen to the coach.
Okay, coach.
Yeah, well,
coach us.
Yeah, and I'm glad. No, that's a wonderful point that John brings up, because what it touches on is the sense. Now, this is for really touches all age groups, but particularly younger folks who are in a generation that's used to change and rapid. To them, their view of things that are long term is much shorter than the rest of us. We think long term is 20 to 30 years. They think of long term as two or more years, and that's a real difference. Now, given that that's the case, one of the temptations, I'll put it, I think that's the best word, John just described, and he didn't say what his temptation was, but there's always one. There is some reason why we make a change. Often I hear that it's about money, pure base number, or you're going to get some increased steps, or you're going to get into a new, maybe you're going to jump into the SES. There are things that you're going to do. When asked why, the reasons very often is very simply, well, it pays more money, or it's closer to home. These are reasons. They're neither good nor bad, right nor wrong, but those are reasons. Until we challenge our thinking, and with somebody who is competent and capable to help us to do that, which many agencies have. The agency I was at some years back had the office I was in was called the Leadership Development Center, but at that agency, and anybody could come there. We had some psychologists, but we had mostly people like myself who had backgrounds in careers and career transition, and people could come and talk to us without fear of any information getting back to their bosses. They could come and talk about their career and talk about the bigger picture of their career and what their temptations were to make a move here, to make a move there. And then they would have somebody to challenge their thinking with them, as John had a wonderful wife to do so for him, if only he had listened. And they don't always listen when people like me say it either. But that's the first thing, is to understand what is it that tempts us to make a move. And if the reason is pure, is kind of, you know, naked greed, then usually, not always, but usually we will be dissatisfied when we get there. It's a funny part of human nature, I've noted, that no matter how much we make at any given time in terms of salary, we very shortly get used to that amount. Now that's the new bottom for us, even though it was maybe a 10% jump. Because we changed jobs, got a 10% bump we were very happy that first paycheck. That's the big one. You see the extra numbers and you say to yourself, wow, this was a great thing. By the third check, most people consider that the bottom again. That's sort of your base in terms of appreciation. They don't appreciate anymore. And so they're suddenly looking at other jobs that might pay even more. That is a cycle. There are people who do that. Now, back in the day, we used to call them job hoppers. Don't hear that term much anymore. It's out of fashion, mostly because of younger people, because they're really not job hopping. their motivation in most cases is not the money. Their motivation is the content of the work. What is it that I would do? Does it make an impact? And interestingly, particularly at the agencies that have relatively sophisticated computer systems, software, hardware, and so forth, and they're staying up, they're staying abreast, those are the most attractive to the younger employees who maybe is still working with an IBM monster on their desk and thinking, wow, all my friends are working for agency XYZ where they get to work with great programs and great things. I think maybe I should go over there. And I actually had somebody say to me recently, a young person, 20-something, say, you know, that he was going to move to another agency, quote-unquote, even if I lose money. That's not as important to me. I'm making plenty. Well, of course, he still lives with mom and dad, so how much money do you really need? That's another whole problem for another show. But what I'm getting at is understanding one's motivation, getting somebody to help you understand what your motivation is, and then flesh out what this would look like in the context of your career. A career is a set of jobs. It's not one job is not a career. It's what are the jobs throughout the lifetime of one's work input. That's the career. And that's what usually a coach will help one to concentrate on. And in workshops, that's what we try to do. We try to get each individual to think of their career, the bigger picture. And as you're making this change, Does it fit? Does it fit in with your career plan? And if not, maybe you ought to wait until the right one comes along. But do it knowingly. Doing it within a context is
how do you do that? I'm got a reason for asking you this.
Sure.
How do you
wondering what you should do with your life, Bob?
No. I've only had two jobs in my life, other than summer jobs.
Yeah.
I had a job for 10 years. I liked it, but I knew I wasn't going to ever get my boss's position, nor did I want it. Mm-hmm. But I didn't know what I wanted to do, and so I went to the beach. And for those of you all that aren't accountants, there's things called T accounts, and it's like a T, and you put pluses on one side and minuses on the other. So I put down everything, and I'm including owning a bar. Controller for this, CFO for that. I had a very good job. And I took a huge decrease. And if you had bet me my life savings, which was nothing then, that it would be a small CPA firm, I'd say, you're crazy. Well, it came out number one. Because I had to be frank with myself.
Yes.
What you know, did it offer me? Plus, 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 minus, minus, minus. And I scored it. A little anal here, but that's how I did it. But but they didn't have people like you then. I could have gone on the couch.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that technique, because that is a technique we use in workshops to help people. We help them by putting a T up and then brainstorm. And it's something that I recommend that people do over a couple of day period. Don't do it in one sitting, because you quickly run out and get distracted. So come back to it. And then I recommend, before doing any calculations of pluses and minuses, show it to somebody who's close to you. And here's why. They know us. If we're lucky, we pick somebody who knows us very well. And they can also then perhaps catch any of the placement of items on our tea list, any of the items that we might have put on one side, but they know us better than that, and they know we're kidding ourselves. People, we all kid ourselves a lot. We tell ourselves one thing because that's what Dad did, or that's what Mom wanted us to do. And for all kinds that's called modeling. There's another called replication. That's a psychological term that has to do with when we move from one job to the other. Replication is we simply look to see how much of what the old job had is in the new job. We basically, all we did was change the building, perhaps, or the boss changed, but that's all that changed. And again, someone who knows us can hopefully will give us the feedback that that's a smart thing to do, or they know us better than we do, and they can call us on it, and so forth. Yeah,
I could say one other thing. When I did change jobs, it allowed me to start the thing called NITP. And I don't actually consider that a job. This is fun. You know, I go out and talk for 3 hours on an unintelligible subject, income taxes, and try to make it sense to people that don't even want to hear it to begin with.
Sure.
And then, you know, my goal is to get them talking. And they go, now I understand it better than what I did before. And it's fun. So I didn't mention that it was a job because I don't really think of it as a job.
You found something you didn't expect to find once you went to the CPA thing. There was one great outcome that came from my switch that wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I met at my last agency, and if I'd stayed, I would have never been at that agency. I met one of my best friends, and we're both retired, and he lives in Williamsburg. But I will every other month make a trip to Williamsburg and stay with his wife and him and have a great time, and that wouldn't have happened. So now would I trade the much happier experience had I stayed, a work experience had I stayed, for that friendship that never would have occurred? I don't know. But something, even in a bad situation, and my last two agencies were bad. Underline bad.
Nameless bad.
Yeah, I won't go into the names.
You know, good.
But unless somebody wants to call and demand that I warn them about this. But at any rate, life is a series of trade-offs. So,
So a long time ago, and I'm 10 years in the workforce. And I like what I did, but I just didn't know I didn't want to stay there. Not because it was abhorrent. It was tough, but the upward mobility wasn't there. But I had to take a cut, but I was willing to do it. I'm glad I did it. But when you get somebody, some of your focus groups, what are their reluctance, and maybe you don't get through to them? I'm certain that has never happened, but maybe to one of your colleagues, or they didn't get through to them. How do you get through to the tough nut?
Well, there's it's all audiences, in my observation, are like a bell-shaped curve. You could distribute them through a bell-shaped curve, where 10% is always going to be actually enthusiastic over almost anything you say, and it could be totally out there, and they're still going to love it. There's another 10% on the other end that's going to say, "I don't care what you say, I'm not doing that, or I don't buy that," and so forth. And so my target, really, all of our targets, I'm sure, are the 80% in between that could go either way. And they really truly just came there to get information about the topic. And sometimes for me, that is the larger question of career and career change. There are lots of details to be covered in that. But where it all starts, and I tell the 90%, one important thing to do for all of us is to know who we are. The more we make decisions based on data, the better we're going to be. Ordinarily, the better the outcome. Most of life is not serendipitous. Most of life, a well-lived life, is thoughtful. And both insightful and foresightful, meaning that we do some work to find out not just what should I do, but who am I? Therefore, what should I do? And I'm leading up to something here, which is where to get that data. How do we find out about who we are and that sort of thing? I am now a sworn believer in testing. It was called assessment instruments. And by the way, anybody can take those instruments. And here's what they do. And I'll tell you where to take them in a minute. Here's what they do. We answer a bunch of questions, which frankly, and I just did it again myself just to check in on myself. And I noticed this again. The questions seem random and to not make any sense. What does that have to do with my career question? But you keep answering them. You keep saying your preference. A lot of it is likes and dislikes. You know, do you like this? Or do you like this more than that? Do you like that more than this? And so forth. And you go on through, you take all the questions. And there are no right answers and no wrong answers, they say. I think that's true. And at the end, nowadays, this is all done on the net. And you instantly get a report about yourself based on what you have told. And I just want to say that even though for people, look, I took a course in grad school on testing and the validity, how to validate and so forth for testing. But darned if I can figure out where these folks who specialize in it come up with the questions. I have no idea how they do that. But daggone it, it works. I know that because every time I've taken them, at least in the last 20 years, every time I take them, I recognize myself as I'm reading the report. And we should. If it was done correctly, there's the validation. We see ourselves in what we're reading? Wow. And they nail me. Then at the end, it says, people like you do very well in the following kinds of jobs. And just about every time I've taken it, I've probably taken it a half dozen times, there's something new on the list. Probably because I'm maturing or getting more senile, one or the other, or both. But there's some new thing. I became, by the way, a professional mediator because that came up on one of those tests. I never thought of mediation. I know what it is, but never occurred to me to do mediation.
What do you mediate?
I'm specializing in elder issues and specifically with families, helping families to communicate with their elder.
Really?
Yeah. And it's fun, interesting
work.
Yeah,
it's tough though.
But it's tough, you bet. But I would never have known to do that. I wouldn't have known I would get as the kind of feedback and wonderful feeling from doing it. It wouldn't have occurred to me, or it didn't anyhow, until I took that testing. Now, where do you find that testing, and what's the best ones? What are the best ones? Well, I would tell any listener who's interested in learning something about themselves from a career perspective, but it's really about life behaviors and lifestyles, go to this website. It's not my website. I don't own it. I have no interest in it, other than it's interesting to do it. www.livecareer.com. All run together, LiveCareer, livecareer.com. And they have an array. They have a lot of information there about job search. But they have a whole section on assessment, and it's called career assessment testing. So you click on that button, and it takes you to several choices. In my opinion, and I've taken probably all of them by now, the best is the Holland, like the country, Holland, H-O-L-L-A-N-D. It was developed by Dr. John Holland in the late 1960s and refined again in the early 80s. The Holland is easy to do. It is the most comprehensive and easily understandable because after you get done, you press the submit button almost instantly. The report comes up. And it's as though Dr. Holland was still here and was talking to us, telling us about ourselves. Now, why is that important? I go back to the need for the big picture for most all of us, I think. Rather than living a serendipitous, see what comes kind of life, why not base choices on data? And this is data. And by the way, I may have made it a habit every time I've taken that test to show it again to reliable, trusted advisors. My mentor, I had a mentor for years, and I would show it to her and ask her to read it and then tell me if she sees me in that. And then she would give me feedback about what she saw. A little bit different, perhaps. But that's what I'm saying, that that's the piece that not enough people are talking about. And I think we should be in my profession. We need to talk about this gathering of information. And therefore, that informs the kinds of choices that we ought to be making. We will feel we ought to be making, and we can feel that way much more confidently by doing that. And by the way, Bob, that is, I want to segue into the importance of coaching / transition training, because in addition to doing that work, I mentioned there are lots of details when it comes to changing jobs. For example, We're gonna need the written information, the literary side of job change. We're gonna have to have a resume, and resumes for most government agencies, the format that they want can be found on USA Jobs, and or frankly, what I did the last time I applied to a federal agency was I went to the agency's website to their employment section where they gave a sample of what that agency likes to see. And just a little tip for government job changers, when we're writing the resume and you come to one of my classes, you're going to hear me say this emphatically. Look at whatever model is presented as the format that they like. Follow it precisely. If they ask for our social security number, which no private sector firm is ever going to ask for on a resume, but many agencies will ask for it. And if they ask for it and it's on the left-hand upper corner of the sample, yours should be on the left-hand side in the upper corner, not randomly somewhere else, because what you have there is a guide for what they're looking for and what they've set up their machinery, their software to look for, and that's where they look for it. So, but that's I'm getting into the weeds. The bigger question is, how would I profit from going to one of these workshops? Because these transition workshops can be 5 days long. That's a real deep dive into the process and to your own personality and to your own equipment. What do you need? So the written part. And then also, what do you need to be prepared for the interview? See, I start out every interview presentation with this phrase. Or this phraseology. I remind people in the room, even if you have been interviewing people for years, even if you think you know about interviewing because you did it very well 15 years ago when you came into this job, my advice is stop and take a breath. Listen to the new etiquettes. Because there are things that that's where the coaching comes in. The coaching part of the training is why not find out how people are interviewing today? It is different than it was 15 years ago. It has evolved.
Could I ask you two
sure.
reverse questions? I'm on a job. Mm-hmm. I'm young. I'm not young. I've been in this new position, first, you know, real position I've ever had, 5 years. And I'm going, gee, I wonder what it's like somewhere else. This place is okay, but it isn't what I want it to be. Although I might not know what I want to be. So the first question would be, how do you draw that out of somebody? And then I'll give you the question after that would be, how does the interviewer draw that out of the person that they're interviewing. In other words, trying to figure out, are they coming there just to hop jobs or are they coming there for some other reason? So
sure.
Let's go on the one side first, the employee.
Well, the motivation for making the change is going to be quite varied from person to person. I understand that. However, the every individual, I think, who's thinking of making a change needs to put themselves in the place of the interviewer. What will they need to hear me say? Will it be satisfying to them if I say, I'm making this change so I can learn a whole new thing and I can be better and I can go on to bigger things and get other jobs as a result of what you'll teach me here? If you think that's the right answer, then you need to come to one of our workshops because that's not what the person who's sitting on the other side of the desk is thinking. But we need to be clear about our motivations, number one, to make a change, and number two, to pare those down into a category of what is the other party really going to look for? What are they going to want? The employer, the new division or whatever. What is it that they're really wanting? And concentrate on that in our answers. And we do a lot of practicing in workshops. I'm a huge believer that we all can improve, but we don't do it by simply hearing somebody say what to do, but to actually be put into the situation and be given a script, of course, but then play out how to put into effect what we've learned in the class about how to interview. The interviewing is critical point. I will say this. In my experience, no one has ever been hired on the basis of a resume. That's not why people get hired. Unless, of course, their last name happens to be the same last name as is on the front door of a private sector, because they just married the daughter of the owner. Okay, then the resume, that might have done it. But no, for all the rest of us, it's the interview, and usually a set of interviews, and then some collaboration between those who interviewed us, or perhaps a panel in many cases. The government loves panels, so it is more efficient time-wise. But then a number of people will be asking us questions, and that's our opportunity to sell them on ourselves. From there is where the decision will come. The recommendation will often go to the hiring manager that this is the person we should hire. It'll be based on that. So therefore, this is the critical junction. And if we walk into the room and if we're not clear about what they're looking for, don't show up with questions about what are they looking for. We should have known that before we walked in the door. How do we know that? We did our homework. We got a copy of the job description. There's one for every single job throughout the million plus employees of the federal government. There is a job description for every single one of them, and they're all accessible. So we find the job description for the job we're applying for. Read it carefully. Question it. Ask yourself, do I have this? Do I have that? Do I have something similar enough to this? And so forth and so forth. Dissect that. And in so doing, what we learn is, what are they really looking for? A little hint, by the way, because I've written a million of those. They're all written. Here's a freebie, folks. They're all written in descending order of importance, meaning the first things that are mentioned in job descriptions, that's what they most want. The first three or four things that are written there. You look at the bottom of the list, those are the things that, if we found somebody with that, that'd be nice. But that's not where their concern is. And a lot of people don't know that. I have run into people who have told me that they were going to apply for one job or another, but they saw at the bottom of the list, and it'd be nice if you can fit into a size 36 set of pair of jeans. And they thought, I'm a 38. I guess I better not apply. And it was the last thing on the list. And I tell them, if you had everything else, whatever that last thing is, becomes you will probably get the interview. And once you're in there, you talk mostly about the top four or five things that you saw on the list. That's what you talk about. Stay there. That's where their interest is. And you almost bring everything back. And one final point, when I keep saying bring the conversation back, go to an interview filled with stories. So it means you got to do some thinking, and I tend to try to write them down. Story. When I say stories, I mean a story from my career, something that happened that was successful. We always say something that worked, not what didn't work, with only one exception. And when we say, here's what worked, they should be in the top four or five areas that were listed. We need a story for each. In other words, yes, I have done that. In fact, 2 years ago, I was on a committee that did exactly that thing, whatever number two is. We did that thing, and we were successful, and we took the agency into a whole new direction, technically, blah, 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 blah. You don't simply go in and sit there and say, yes, I know that program. Why, yes, I know that program. I know about all of them, because that's what everybody says. Those who have been through our training go in and say, that program? Oh, let me tell you about how we implemented that at such and such. Here's what we did. Here are the common problems that arise. Here's how we overcame them. I was part of that team. I'm proud of that. Whew. There's a sale. Now somebody is selling themselves. And it is, you know how I know that this comes as a newsflash to so many people? I know it because I was an interviewer for both the government and for private sector. I was a recruiter. I interviewed people for over 30 years. And in the course of that, I learned a number of things about the people who came and sat in front of me. One of the things I learned was they were ill-prepared. They hadn't really thought through what I would be needing to hear or what would be. And but we had sent them the job description. So they had the cheat sheet. They had the answer already before them. But what we needed to hear was, don't just tell me you know something. Tell me the context in which you know it. What's the story that goes with it? And that, by the way, that was worth listening to this show if you just heard that piece, because you will excel at interviews just by knowing that.
So again, somebody younger, and they'd like some things on the job, but not enough to stay. Mm-hmm. So they see this ad, if you will, and it has the different requirements and the like. And then they question themselves, okay, the first three things, of course, they know how to read one of those. But the first three things I've done, but I haven't done enough of. The other things, maybe I haven't got a whole lot of experience. Do I then go to look for another job, or do I go to my supervisor and say, here's a list of things I want to do, because I really think I'm good at the top five, but the other I still want to work on. Changing jobs is... I guess if you've never changed a job, and no one's got a feeling for it, but if you have, once, like John said, once you left, you're gone.
Yeah. Well, there was one exception for me, but yes, you're right. Once you can't unring that bell most of the time, right? Yeah.
So how do you approach the supervisor and you go, I don't really like part of this, but I really like the other part, and I'd like to do more of the other part and less of the part I don't like. And supervisor might say, nice knowing you. I would hope that that's not the case if they're marginally good or better.
I found when I was a supervisor that I really appreciated an employee said, these are my goals. I mean, when he was already my employee for a while, and they said, you know, expressed an interest in development, getting ahead. I think most supervisors, or at least good supervisors, are very receptive to that, and that really helps both the employee and the supervisor. The supervisors that aren't receptive to that, I would say that goes in the con category when you're
the right-hand column.
You may want to start looking to get out from under her, I was impressed by that.
Well, I certainly would second that encouragement, because if and only if our supervisor is approachable, and we learn that as we go along. I have also taught leadership courses in several of the agencies, and I encourage all supervisors and above to make sure their doors open, to make sure, and in fact invite people to bring their questions, and especially questions about their career. The more we do that, the more that is done, then this young person that Bob describes is more comfortable to seek out a mentor in the boss, but also that mentor can become an advocate for them. I've seen that happen, meaning that this boss says, you know, you've done about as much as you can do here. We don't have these other things that I hear you saying that you want. Why don't we both keep an ear out, and I'll let you know if I hear of anything that would make sense. And there's nothing like a referral from your actual boss, particularly interagency, to call the boss of the one that's posted and to say, hey, listen, I've got a guy, bah, 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 bah. Here are his pluses, and I'm in close communication with him. I would hate to lose him. On the other hand, what you've got open is a big opportunity that I think he's ready for, and I would love to see him really shoot like a star from that, and I'll just replace him. And so that's not a guarantee, but that is as good as it gets for moving. So that's a great point, John.
Okay, and then again, I'm trying to look at it both sides. The employee wants to make an impression that either they like or don't like what they're doing, and how can they improve on it. And the supervisor, I would assume, unless they don't like them, wants them to stay. It's just, you know, I'm just probably doing this from my experience because of what I do. People think they want to do it and then find it's mind-boggling. But any job's like that,
sure.
I would think. I mean, you can make any job as detailed as you want. And then you just have to – and then the others that can stand on their feet and explain it. Not everybody can do that. They might be able to sit behind a desk, and some of the sharpest minds I know are great behind a desk. They're not so good in front of people. So, you know, tag team. You tell me what to say, and I'll go say it.
Sure.
All right. And then what's this, livecareer.com? I'm going to take it. It's a little late in life, but I'm going to take it.
Yeah, they're charging something now. I don't know what it is. It used to be free when they first opened up, and I guess their banker must have told them they do need to make money. So
or their accountant.
Yeah.
All righty. So then, I mean, I'm hitting hard at the beginning point because I just read about the constant change in the younger folks coming to work, unlike probably most people in the studio, happy to get a job. Maybe you all weren't because you were gifted. I wasn't. I was happy to get a job, even if it meant pounding out tax returns. It's better than any other job I could get, and it wasn't particularly a great place visually to work. It was a great place professionally to work, but visually it was...
Yeah, the environmental factors can be bad, but the key, as Mike pointed out, so true, is the motivating factors. Do I like the work?
Yes.
Am I challenged? Whatever. Those are the motivators you should look for in deciding whether you want to accept a job or stay in the job. The environmental factors are I always found, in fact, Dr. Herzberg, I think, pointed out, Frederick Herzberg pointed out, that the motivating factors are what you should be looking at, not the environmental factors.
My environmental factors. You didn't leave an apple on your desk overnight.
Because of rats or humans?
Yep. Yeah, rats. Anyway, we don't need to go there. So, but it was just a fabulous place to work. Now, the other thing, again, this might offer some advice. The place I work, everyone was young. Everyone was pretty much the same. But that's not always the case now, where just a small percentage might be young, and how do they fit into the culture of the other? And it's going to be pretty hard. And Andrew said, you've done enough babbling. me, not you, not Michael, not John. We have less than 2 minutes. Why don't we just let that one go? Final comments, Michael. This is I've been learning.
Well, good, good. And so have I. I think that in parting, I would say from the generational side, something that I'm hearing a lot in the workshops and from private conversations with people that are transitioning. Mostly the people I meet are 55 plus. And so what they're sharing is that the generational differences are enormous. And working that through is very difficult. Just remember, younger people have a short horizon compared to those of us who have longer. And most employers are learning that.
All righty. Thanks for being on, Mike. And how does somebody get in touch with you real fast?
Oh, they could send me an email at Mike Townsend, MikeTownsend at AOL.com.
Perfect. We got three seconds. Thank you, Andrew. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, John. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.